ABC and Poison Arrow, that was the 80s Whopper song that you picked for today, 1981. Well picked. Right, 10 minutes to 9, every Friday. We do a little thing called Sci-Fry, Science Friday. Third instalment of our new feature. It stands, of course, for Science Fridays, and it's a chance to celebrate all that Merseyside has to offer from the world of science. You thought this went on in other cities, in other parts of the world. It's happening right here. Now, we've been talking with all kinds of experts from the School of Tropical Medicine, University of Liverpool, John Moores University, all famous for their knowledge, their know-how, and world-leading developments, pushing the boundaries of developments and technology and discovery as well. So if you want to know if it's possible to travel through a black hole, or why you're attached or attracted to a certain brand of food or drink, Fridays with us is where you'll want to be today. Let me introduce Professor Caroline Wilson from Liverpool John Moores University and the director of The Face Lab. Morning.
Good morning.
The Face Lab, tell me more.
Well, so the work that we're involved in FaceLab is in relation to depiction of human remains. So either for forensic investigation to help the police identify people, or within archaeological investigations to depict the faces of people from the past.
So forensic and archaeological research, how big is the gap between those two?
It's pretty small. I mean, the application is different and the reasons we do it are very different, but the actual science and the methodology that we use is the same for forensic investigation or archaeology.
Yeah.
We just might have slightly different preservation of remains. We might have a different reason for doing it, and there might be a different speed. So forensic work is often required tomorrow, whereas within archaeology we have a bit more time.
Right, so it's a bit more of a laid-back gig when you're doing a bit of Egyptology or something like that. But if the police come to you and say, look, we need your help, we need to do this, time is of the essence.
Usually,
this is where you swing into what you do.
Yeah, and what we can do as well within archaeology is we can test new techniques and new developments and then apply them to forensic investigation when we feel certain of the methodology.
You can kind of timeline, can't you? If you look back through the years, you know, we're getting into 100 or so years now, when fingerprint, you know, when we discovered we can identify somebody from a fingerprint, that was a real kind of wow moment. And within your career, have there been any wow moments like that? DNA, I suppose, is probably the biggie.
Yeah, so DNA, I think, is the future, and being able to predict people's facial appearance just from their DNA. I think that's where we're going. We're not quite there yet, but I think that's going to be the future. Right. Within my lifetime of work, probably the biggest development has been in relation to clinical imaging. So the access to being able to study living people through computer tomography and magnetic resonance imaging, the kind of imaging they do in hospitals.
That's, right.
That allows us to build much better standards that we can use for our methodology.
Let's go back to the DNA for a second, because how can you... I know you can... Well, you can tell if somebody was at a scene from their DNA. How can you tell the way that they looked or their build from their DNA? How can that work?
Well, there's lots of developments now trying to link the genetic material to facial features and to facial types.
Oh, wow.
So already there are developments that allow very generic face types and hair colour and eye colour and ancestry groups just from DNA.
So you get a bit of DNA. Sorry if I've got all the terminology wrong, you know, forgive me, but you get a bit of DNA, and from that, with a bit of work or a lot of work, you can say they had blue eyes, they had brown hair, they lived in a particular part of the country.
Yeah.
So that's incredible,
that
isn't it?
Is possible to do already. And what scientists are trying to do now is to link more detail to genetic material, so that not only can you get very broad descriptions of a face, but you might be able to get their face shape and their nose shape and their eye shape, etc.
So when we see the EFITs on television, how accurate are they?
Well, the EFITs are slightly different because they're made usually from people's descriptions. So the accuracy of them depends on the memory of the witness.
Right.
And what the artist does in those cases is demonstrate the memory of the witness. So they're different things. In a sense, it's about depicting a face from very little information, which makes them in the same ballpark.
So geography plays a part as well, doesn't it? You know, because with different traits, different DNA, different the way we look in different parts of the country. Do you know what I'm getting at here?
So part of the research we've done is looking at averaging faces from different geographical regions. So we did the Faces of Merseyside project, for example.
Scouse face?
Yeah. Okay. And what that allows you to do is to look at the average features across an area. So it gives you a visual depiction of the demographics, if you like, of a particular region. And that allows you to see changing demographics between Liverpool now and Liverpool 50 years ago, and how the content of the city in terms of people has changed.
Have you always wanted to do this? It was fantastic. I know you do it every day, so and whatever job you do every day gets a bit, oh, not this again. Well, that's a fantastic job you've got.
It is. Never a dull day. It is a fantastic job. And it allows me to combine the two things I really love, which are art and science, together and make a career out of that.
Producer Steve is well into his Egyptology, and you worked on a Discovery Channel programme, didn't you? I think he spotted you on that and said, I've got to get here into the programme. So tell me about The Screaming Man, was it?
The Screaming Man, yeah. So we do a lot of work with ancient Egyptians because we get a lot of preservation of soft tissues as well as skeletal information. So you can, in other words, you can see some of the preserved facial features. So that, in effect, allows us to produce more accurate facial depictions because we're not just using the skeleton, we're also using the preserved soft tissues.
Is that because it's very arid, it's very dry in these countries? Because moisture is the killer, isn't it?
Yeah, dry conditions, dry and cold, dry and hot, doesn't matter, but it preserves soft tissues as well as skeletal information.
Wow, that's incredible. And any exciting developments in your field on the horizon? I mean, the DNA thing you mentioned before, but John Moore's really pushing the boundaries here.
Yeah, so the work that we're doing now is looking at movement and animation. So not just depicting a face from the past, but animating that and working with voice experts and accent experts to get the most likely movement and voice of an individual. So what we're hoping to do in the future is see Richard III talking, for example.
Richard III talking?
Yeah.
Okay. I've got to take you back to The Screaming Man, because I mentioned The Screaming Man, but I didn't mention who he was, because from my history books and history lessons in school, mummies always were kind of like, you know, arms crossed across the chest and, you know, a very kind of straight expression. But this mummy, this person had a screaming depiction on their face. That's really unusual, isn't it?
It is unusual. And most of the mummies were produced in very controlled environments. So the mummification process was controlled by a practitioner.
Yeah.
In this case, it looked like there was some agony on the face of the individual at the time of mummification, which is why he's an unusual case.
Which would suggest that they were still alive, because this is my mind starting to go, oh, they must have been still alive when they mummified them. That wasn't the case.
It's unlikely, I'd say, but that it's not my area either. I leave that to the Egyptologists to look at the historical context, but it's unlikely that someone would be alive through the mummification process.
Do you get to go to different countries of the world and do what you do?
Occasionally, yeah. I've had a few trips to Egypt for the ancient Egyptian work, and occasionally I get to travel, but mostly things get sent to me now because we have a lot of digital data in the virtual world. We don't need to travel anymore.
Oh, flipping heck. The virtual world spoils it all. I can just imagine you in your lab there, you know, with the virtual goggles on there, you know, just outside the pyramid. So, listen, it's been fascinating to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed for coming in. So, when's the next dig and can I come?
Yes, you can, and I'm not quite sure.
Okay. Probably be round here somewhere. We'll never get off to Egypt. But listen, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
A real fascinating subject to talk about on Sci-Fi. Thank you. You're welcome. It's 9 o'clock almost. It's BBC Radio Mersey.